Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
Showcase new authors, and I am host Tom Riedel, and tonight on show number 116, it is May 30th, 2022, Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day to everybody out there. Tonight's show, we're going to have on Wayne Allen Drake. He wrote Surrender, and you'll be on with us shortly. And now more about us, where you can find us out there. You can find us at The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors on Facebook, and find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriedel.net in the blog section, and the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for The Writer's Lounge. Find me on Twitter at tomriedel56, and our email is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line and we will get back to you. A special note, we can now also be heard on your Alexa device. Subscribe to Apple Podcasts and ask her to play The Writer's Lounge showcasing new authors. I'd also like to put in a plug for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike, and I also review books on both sites as well. Upcoming authors on the Writer's Lounge on June 13th, 2022, Nancy McLaughlin, who wrote American Nomads, will be here. Hands down, one of the best and most memorable character-driven stories I have ever read. They are nomads, a roaming group of young adults inspired by living life without jobs and the absence of four walls of a house to constrain them. On June 27th, 2022, Richard Bell will be here with his book, Life Seemed Good, But. These interesting, funny, quirky short stories and parodies of life are far beyond strange. They stretch our imaginations into the outrageously bizarre. And words, places, and people and things in this wonderful world of ours have many different dimensions to them. I hope you'll tune in to these exciting upcoming shows. And next is our segment called Writer's Topics. And this is where I introduce my amazing She's been called that, by the way, co-host, Terry Brown. And I'm going to bring her on right about now. And Terry, are you there?
I'm sure here.
And the amazing Terry has now joined us. And I have to let everybody know that the author that is going to be on tonight is a little bit behind the times right now, because right now apparently he doesn't have the call-in number. And I'm going to ask Terry to talk a little bit about her topics while I send the telephone number to him, and hopefully he can get in touch with us very soon. But I want to let everybody know that he also referred to me as the legend, Terry, and it's the first time since doing the show for 11 years that I've been called the legend. So how do you think that?
Well, I mean, I think that's pretty great. I mean, yeah, I mean, you're the legend. I'm amazing. I think that, you know, we could just call the show over right now and just go home. I mean, this is great.
Yeah, we sure can. So while I try to communicate with Wayne here and send him the number, tell us what's on your mind this week on Writer's Topics.
All right, well, you and I had talked a little bit about the fact that, you know, we should maybe discuss dialogue. And I was wondering exactly what to say about dialogue. It's one of my favorite parts of writing. I think that dialogue can move a story along. And I was thinking about, well, how did I use dialogue in Sunflowers Beneath the Snow in a way that maybe is a little different? And I had a lot of history that I had to get across, a lot of what could really be kind of boring history about Ukraine and their relationship with Russia. And rather than have like a boring lecture, I decided to do that in dialogue. So I used two different characters, for instance, Danya and Betsy, and had them kind of arguing their points. And while doing so, I was able to bring in all kinds of history to explain why they believed that maybe they should vote for a particular person for president. So I think that's a good way for dialogue to work.
Yeah, and then, you know, along with the character development, which is kind of fun when you're creating people out of thin air, it goes along really well if you can bring in somebody into a conversation and start dialogue, because you really have to draw on the personalities of both of the people in the scene. And it adds a new dimension to the writing. You've got your narrative where you explain a scene, and then you've got your dialogue, which takes it to a new level, as if, for instance, you're watching a movie. So I find it very interesting when that happens. I'm right now writing a short story, and it's happened to me today where, for the first time and for a very long time since I wrote my last book, Poppy's Prison, I got really involved in the story, and it just started flowing and it wouldn't stop. And I'm sitting here for, I think it was 2 or 3 hours at least, just letting it all flow out. And that, when that happens, it's just amazing to me. Would you agree with that it brings it to a new level when you're actually, you know, bringing in the dialogue of a character?
I think it does. It brings it to a new level that lets you kind of explore what's going on with that character. I also love to have dialogue that has a little bit of dialect to it so that you can see, you know, whether someone is super well-educated or whether they grew up in a particular area of the country or I just think there's so much that you can do with dialogue. It explains so much about a character without you having to say something like, this character is educated or this character lives in the South. Just the dialogue would let someone know that.
Yeah, and I know that in your book, we're talking about people from Ukraine. So there is a character in your book who comes over to America and engages in conversation. So did you have that in your book, and was that hard to, you know, was that hard to input into your story?
It was a little bit, because I had my character who believed that she had a really good grasp of the English language, and then when she got here, she realized that she did not. And you had to walk a very fine line between allowing her to bumble and make some mistakes without making her look stupid or uneducated or, you know, incapable, because she was not an incapable person. She was just English as a second language. And so that was really interesting. And I also focused quite a bit on the fact that she came to the United States into a small southern town. And that small southern town had the southern dialect. And the southern dialect is very different when you're hearing it than the dialect she would have learned in a classroom, which would have been a very, like whitewashed English language, you know, that didn't have any kind of dialect to it at all. So you can imagine that she gets here and she hears someone say something like, "I'm going to change the oil in my car," and she doesn't know what they mean, because in the South you change the oil, and in other areas of the country you change the oil. It's a very different, it's just very different. And so I was able to kind of pull that out, that, you know, here she thought she knew the language, and yet the dialect threw her completely.
My mind goes back to Mark Twain. And, of course, everybody out there has probably at one time or another read Huckleberry Finn. And, of course, there's controversy involved in the way people talk and the dialect that they use, especially back then. And there was racial overtones, of course, in his work. But it was a truth that he told in the way that people talked back then. And I often wonder when writers sit down today if they sort of try to avoid being, you know, so direct. And maybe the word truthful kind of comes in here, to represent a character that lived back then, or lived, as your story talks about in what you just mentioned, lived in a time when this person had come over to America, that their dialect was, you know, not exactly American, infused with our language that we speak here. So I think it's a challenge, and I think it's liberating to a point when we break out of those constraints and we start writing about people that really come alive in our imaginations and then come alive on the screen and the computer where we're typing a story. And again, it happened to me today, and I just fell in love with those moments, because they don't come very often. At least they don't come to me very often. But anyways, anything else on your mind there, Terry?
We're still waiting for Wayne, I take it, huh?
Yeah, we got him on the air now. And the other thing that I want to mention about Wayne is that not many authors have done it, but he promoted our show, as I indicated, by referring to us as The Legend and Amazing. And I'm going to keep repeating that until it settles in my brain. But he also talked about giving us a recipe for a peach cobbler. So when I introduce him, we're going to hold him to that, and he's going to have to come up. So, Wayne, if you're listening, and I know you are, go ahead and, you know, scramble for that recipe. But now we go on to the next portion of the show, and, of course, this is the main event, the guest author intro and interview portion of the show, and I had the pleasure of reading and reviewing Surrender. And I want to remind everybody out there, there may be a few calls tonight, we don't know, but if you'd like to talk to Wayne, or you would like to talk to the legendary and amazing Tom and Terry, give us a call at area code 914-219-0868. And the book, Surrender, and here is my review of Surrender: highlighting the underlying resilience of the human spirit in the hope that we can find our true selves even during the worst of times. Adam Lankershim's life has been extremely hard and good luck free, unable to afford decent health care in an America that has evolved into an impoverished and crime-ridden nation. He seeks out the help of a veterinarian who gives him a dire diagnosis. He has less than a month to live, Finally, he decides to live life to the fullest, despite the fact that he only has weeks to live. With his faithful cat, Miss Fortune, and his best friend and lesbian soulmate, Sarah, by his side, he heads off to Las Vegas to live out his dreams. Accompanying him on his mission, he brings a whole lot of newfound cash that he retrieved after witnessing a deadly drug deal gone bad. This all happened in a secret tunnel beneath the tanning salon where he worked. With involved nefarious individuals seeking him out, it was another good reason to flee the bright lights of Vegas. But Adam's ultimate destiny will be to rescue a woman from a reality TV show where immigrants are held in cages and compete to become Americans. Will Adam's bad luck life change, and how will this final journey he is on impact the others in his life? From the opening pages, the story pulled at my interest, and it lit up my desires to learn more about Sarah, who was about to tell Adam's story to a reporter from a national public radio station. The tale began with Sarah holding a pair of red faded cowboy boots that she had just taken out of the closet. It was a story of heartbreak, bad news, and rebirth amidst a nation that was politically polarized and fragmented like never before. Surrender highlighted the underlying resilience of the human spirit and the hope that all of us can find our true selves even during the worst of times. If you're like me, the story, when the last page is read, will surprise, delight you, and it'll also give you a chance to reflect on the extraordinary times we now find ourselves living in. Wayne Drake tells a great story here, and humanity is lucky and blessed to have him in its fold. And now it is my pleasure to welcome Wayne Allen Drake to the Writer's Lounge, and I'll reach right over here and push the button. And Wayne, are you there?
Is this thing on?
Yes, it is.
Is this thing working?
You're on.
Oh,
with,
good.
Terry, you're on with Terry and Tom, and you're on the Writer's Lounge. So I'm glad you got the number. I have to apologize because normally I send authors more of a detail to the show for them to call in, and I somehow forgot to do that. So I beg for your apology here, Wayne.
Well, you sent it in, but I was trying to call you from my computer, and then I think it wasn't going on because I was also on Facebook, so I think there was a problem. But then
yeah.
I started getting frantic texts from my mom saying, they're waiting for you. They're waiting for you right now. And I said, I know, I'm on hold, but anyway.
Yeah, so normally I send out an email or whatever, but welcome to the Writer's Lounge. And I'd like to ask you on behalf of me and Terry, tell us about yourself. What or who inspired you to sit down and type out the stories in your head?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, and thanks for that review. But I actually came to talk about my cookbook, Calabash Cooking. I know, Terry, I know you live down in Calabash, North Carolina, right?
I do.
I went there 20-something years ago, and I stayed there for a month in that town of Calabash to write a story. And I thought that nobody else had ever heard of that place in the world, but I'm glad to know that
there's
somebody.
Well, not only have I heard of it, but, you know, I live here, and I've probably eaten at all the restaurants that you tried.
All three of them?
Yeah, well, there's probably 15 now. We've grown.
Oh, wow. There was one stoplight when I was there back in 1991, and I think I got a ticket for running through it. So, like all of your guests, I'm probably been writing my whole life, like the two of you, and when I was a kid, I knew I wanted to be a writer. I just didn't know that you could make a living as a writer. I thought that's just something you did while you were a mechanic or, you know, whatever else you did. And it turns out that's true. Everybody has to have another job if they're a writer. But, so that's how I got into it, just because I loved reading. I loved, you know, all of that. And it's been something I've been fortunate enough to make a living doing it. I work in the movie marketing business. So I promote, make trailers and stuff, which is how I came up with the idea of calling Tom the Legend, because you have to have a nickname. You have to be Tom the Legend and Terry, the amazing Terry. Which also wasn't if you're a magician, Carrie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I felt a little like a magician there, but that's okay.
Yeah, I like it.
You know, magicians are always amazing.
Has a nice ring to it, Wayne. And I understand that you did the trailer for one of my favorite characters in movies, and that would be Deadpool. Is that correct?
I did. There are a lot of trailer companies, and so a lot of people get to work on things. So it's usually typically not one company that works on one trailer, but I got to do a lot of fun stuff and write a lot of funny stuff for Deadpool, which kind of that character kind of writes itself. So that part, that was easy, but it was a lot of fun. And then there were a lot of bad movies. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, did you work with the actor?
I met him. I didn't work a lot with him. Usually when we would shoot him, if we had to do a special shoot, they would have like stand-ins for him. But I'm a big fan of Ryan Reynolds, and I'm a big fan of that franchise. So it was a lot of fun.
Very good. In your book, there's a piece of dialogue, and we were just talking about it before you came on, about dialogue and character development. From a character in the first pages of Surrender, that gave me a few minutes to reflect on. And these were the words you wrote. "Son, the men who govern this country are more rich and powerful than you could ever hope to be. Avoid them at all costs. Your school will tell you that you can make a difference. Don't believe them. You can't and you won't. It's a fool's game for damn sure." End of quote. What percentage of Americans do you think would agree that no matter what we do, we can't make a difference? And do you think we can honestly influence the rich and powerful?
Well, that's the character's dad speaking. So there is a little bit of me that believes that, but that's a guy who's had a hard luck life. And his wife left him, left him to raise a son, and he kind of watched he lost his money in the 401k money in the crash of 2008. So he watched a lot of bad happen to a lot of people. And I think that there are a lot of people out there that feel that way. And that was a lot of the motivation about my book, was sitting there and watching a lot of things happen and feeling helpless, because I think that's what a lot of people, that's the way they feel. They feel helpless. They're watching people run the country who don't really seem to understand their problems. And it's on both sides. It's not that's kind of universal. So I think there's a lot of helplessness and despair. And the main character, Adam, had to kind of figure out how much of that was true and how much of that was just his dad being despondent about the way things worked out.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, Terry, if that answers your question. But.
Yeah, I did. Terry, you get anything for Wayne?
Well, I was just thinking that, I don't know if you knew this, but I rode across the United States on a tandem bicycle with my husband in the summer of 2020. And,
right,
you know,
that was
COVID summer and the summer of the riots and, you know, pretty much a summer where you could feel pretty despondent about things. And traveling across the United States and meeting people was the best way to get over that feeling that, you know, essentially the world's going to hell in a handbasket. It was a good feeling to get out there and meet people and see that there are things that you can do and that, you know, the world isn't as bad as you'd like, as some people want you to believe there is. So can you tell me, how were the characters in Surrender born? Like, how long did it take you to bring them to life, get them down on the page?
Well, you know, that's a good question too. And you know, just for going back to what you said about riding across the country on a bike and seeing it, and I'm a huge fan of traveling. But back in 1991, I grew up in Los Angeles, Southern California. I was born in San Diego. And back in 1991, when I was trying to go somewhere to work on a story, and a friend that I'd worked with had a condo in Calabash. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know anything about that side of the country. So driving out there and spending a month there, I met people, and I remember they were so worried about Bill Clinton being elected president. And I thought, wow, that's interesting, because he, to me, is the guy who's going to help turn things around. But they weren't, but there wasn't this there wasn't as much animosity as there is now. So we could actually talk about things, and I really saw how scared they were, like that their way of life, that their guns were going to be taken, that all these things that they'd been told were going to happen. And it made me think, you know, there is another side to everything. And so I think at that point, you know, you start to realize there are different ways of looking at life. And then the more I'm not a kid anymore. So I've met a lot of people who have gone through things much worse than, you know, I have ever gone through. And you start to think about that, like, a lot of these characters, how do they even get up out of bed every day? You know, how do they go forward when they're working in a little town in Arizona and they're making nothing and they couldn't afford to go to college and they can't even afford health care? So it was kind of like that. It was born through that, through meeting people. And to me as a writer, traveling is the best way to develop characters.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because every part of the United States will give you a different flavor of humanity. And I find that it isn't always black and white, as a lot of people out there, especially when you troll around, where, I don't know, maybe that's not the right word to use. I don't do trolling, but if I'm going around on the internet and I see people talking politics, it's more than just two-dimensional. It's more three-dimensional. There's a lot of complexities to people, and unless you sit down with them and really talk things out, and not just on the internet, but actually meet them and sit down and talk to them like we did in the old days before, obviously, COVID put a damper on all that, that's the only way we're ever going to find out about the people that live around us. And Terry is a great example of traveling the country on a bicycle. You meet all different kinds of people. They have all different kinds of views. And I think you'd be surprised of how many people would actually agree with a lot of the things that we talk about and want to argue about on the internet. There's a lot of gray areas in there too. So I think your story brought out a lot of that, and I applaud you for doing that. And the other thing I want to applaud you for doing, obviously, that you just told us about being part of Deadpool, there are sprinkles of humor throughout your book. Oven mitts being worn to deal with global warming and several other humorous references to politics and even a president. How important is humor, do you think, in selling characters in a book to an audience?
Anybody who knows me knows that anything I'm going to do is going to have humor to it. And I think some people are surprised to find that I can actually go deeper than that, which I try not to go too deep too often because, you know, it's like being in the deep end of a pool. Like, I start to panic and then I have to get back to the shallow end. But I always use comedy because it's a way of breaking the ice, and it kind of helps people relax and it catches them off guard sometimes. And it's not so, you know, it's not so in your face if you're dealing with bigger, heavy subjects, you know.
Yeah, in your story, you, you know, touched on a drug deal gone bad right below the tanning salon of your main character. And nothing can be more violent and disturbing as that. And it takes... It takes talent to infuse humor into that, I think. And I think you did a really good job of doing that. But that's what I took from it. Terry?
Let me see here.
Terry, how many times have you been in a drug deal and it went really bad like that, and you're like, oh, man, what am I going to do?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that happens to me daily. You know, I mean, I live here in Calabash.
Yeah. I even the sound of that. Yeah,
I love the idea of adding humor, especially in areas that are difficult, because like you said, it does put people a little more at ease. And if you can make fun of something, then you have maybe a better chance of opening up your eyes to see a little bit more about what it is. Because if you can make fun of something, that means that you can see the other side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can only be serious about something, then you're not going to have your eyes very open to being to seeing what someone else may see in the same situation. So,
right, right.
Yeah, so let's go back just a little bit to the idea that, you know, you create these movie trailers. And so, you know, you introduce books and you introduce movies. Do you think the same kind of creative skills that you use in a movie trailer are needed when you're doing the first pages of your book or even your cover?
You know, it's a different it's a different format, obviously. It's a much shorter format. You know, trailers are 2.5 minutes, TV commercials are 30 seconds, and there's very little writing in them. But then we'll do mm-hmm. things like behind the scenes or featurettes, and then I get to maybe write more. And then you can break out in some other things. But I was listening to your podcast last week, and you were speaking with a gentleman who was talking about that he was a screenwriter. And this book actually started about 25 years ago. I wrote a screenplay that had elements of this in it. It had the guy working at the tanning salon, but it was more of a story about a guy who was hopeless, and he got his disease, but it just didn't have very much of this in it. And it was at the time I kind of put it on a shelf because I didn't know where to go with it. You know, I had a rough draft, but then when you start watching characters in real life and what was going on in our country and just a lot of it comes from just, I mean, you know, I don't want to get too political here, but a president who was actually a reality show host to me was like a great character. You know, how do you, you know, I kind of owe him for that because I wouldn't have thought of that, you know, and it's just funny, you know, so it's like taking that and then using some other things. And I think I did some versions of this that were much darker, and I thought, you know, that's way too dark. And, you know, you want to find the right balance of funny, and you don't want to, you know, you don't want to turn off half of the population from buying your book. So you have to kind of pull it back and find the funny and find the important things that you want to say. So, so back to your thing. I think being part of the movie process and living in Hollywood, you see a lot of absurd things also. So there is so much absurd stuff that is where, you know, like Mark Twain, that's where what I loved about him as a kid, he could take absurdities and make them funny, you know? And even though like slavery was not anything to laugh at, there were still things that he could dance around big issues and just be so clever and just be so poignant. And you're like, wow, you know, I'll never be like him, but if I can get somewhere close to some of these things, you know, it would be a good goal. So it's other writers, I think, that help you. David Sedaris, I think I mentioned him in my bio. I read a lot of him. Just Woody Allen, I read as a kid. Just people who were laughing at absurdities of life and just making you go, wow, it's such a funny way to think about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Terry and Wayne, we do have a caller here. This person isn't shy like on my past shows.
Be careful.
Yeah, we do have a caller.
I have some friends out there who are funny, and they may be trying to break through. So.
And I don't have a name, but I have an area code, so I'm going to introduce them with the area code. And area code 310, you're on the air, and you have a question or comment for Wayne or Tom and Terry, of course.
I do have a question for Wayne. This is Jeff, and I read the book. It's fantastic. It's also really authentic. I was just curious how you did all your research on the cartel.
Well, like I said, who hasn't had a drug deal that went bad? You know, we've all been through there. Tom. I was reading about him. I mean, we've all had to deal with that, right, Tom?
Yes.
Yes. So it's just fun. Made it probably working on too many movies about drug deals gone bad. If you notice in the book, I do point a lot of fun fingers at Steven Seagal movies. So.
And what's your name?
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Thank you. This is Jeff. I thought there
okay,
was just great authenticity to the work. You know, it's like he had lived some of these things. It seemed like you know a lot about gambling as well, sir.
Yeah. Okay. Hang up on this guy.
Okay, Jeff. There we go.
I might know that guy. So.
Okay, but yeah, I would tell everybody else out there, if you want to give us a call, you can do that at the area code 914-219-0868. And Wayne, I'd like to go on to my next question here. There are references to spirituality and religion in your book, but one reviewer said that you aren't preachy in telling Adam's story, but there is certainly a certain vibe in your story that relates. I agree. I don't think it's preachy at all, but you made this point, which gave me a lot to think about. A character says in regards to the story of Jesus, and it's a longer quote here, but I'm going to read it anyway. But my biggest complaint, the one that I could never get over, was what kind of a father would do that, kill his own son? All I could think about was my dad, who'd done everything he could for me despite his limited education and money. I knew he would not, could not ever sacrifice me for anyone or anything. He would have died before he saw any harm come to me, and he did. I stopped going to church, and I never thought twice about my decision. And have you gotten any feedback from religious readers in regards to that?
Yeah, I have had some people who read it who wanted to kind of explain to me their version of that story, and maybe it's not so literal, and I understand that. But if I knew more about other religions, maybe I would put them into, but this is basically kind of an American thing. So I consider myself spiritual, but when you get down to the actual words and teachings, it's kind of hard for me. I grew up in a religious household. My mom's side of the family were all very religious, and I used to, you know, kind of like struggle with a lot of it until I got into college and I had a philosophy class, and I started to really think about the fact that if I had been born in, you know, Asia, I would have a whole different take on religion, or, you know, India, or any, I suppose India is in Asia, but, you know, around the world, you have different stories that you're told. And to me, the most important one was just, you know, be good to people. And whether there's something that comes after this or not, it really shouldn't matter. You should still treat this world, this life, as something important, and take care of everybody, take care of people, and love them.
Yep, and I guess spirituality, or the way we treat human beings, has a lot to do with your story, aside from a religious text that may be in it, but it all relates back to, you know, treating people well and with respect, which we're sorely missing in today's world, I think. How have friends and family received your book? Along with, I guess,
yeah, I'm
Jeff,
really curious
that would be...
about that. Yeah, I'm curious about that, especially if your mom's family is very religious, how they felt about your book.
For the most part, I think I give them a break and don't try to lean on them too much, because I know that maybe they would have trouble with a lot of it. I've also had some friends who are, you know, pretty Republican, and they thought on early drafts, I have a good friend who was kind of offended at, and I did pull back. Like I was saying earlier, she had read a version, and I thought, you know what, that's probably not fair to people who don't buy in 100%, but feel like they're being lumped into just being a Republican. You know, maybe they aren't full Trumpers, which, by the way, I was careful not to use his name, even though I think we all know who I was talking about. So for the most part, people were great. The one thing, and I think, I don't know if the both of you find this as a writer, that I try not to hit my friends up too much, because a lot of people don't really want to read a book. I mean, you know, you have to find those friends who actually do read, because everyone will tell you, oh, send me your book, I'll read it. And then they just don't, they're just not book readers. So I always feel bad for them when they know that it's sitting there and they haven't gotten to it. So I try to find beta readers. I try to find people who are actually want to do that. And maybe I have friends who are other writers, and then we'll switch, we'll change books. And then I feel like I get real authentic commentary, you know, if it's, especially if it's a rough draft. But since it's been published, the people who've read it seem to be really on board with it. And I also want to mention, Terry, I was listening last week to you. I want to apologize. I was the one who gave you 2 1-star reviews. That was on accident. I was trying to do it, and I couldn't figure out how to work the thing. So it kept coming out as 1-star reviews.
You've been
listening not
to our show.
You, but okay.
I don't know. I figured I was going to say that to make you feel better.
Okay. I've gotten over it. It was stunning on that particular day, but it's not anymore. So.
Yeah, I know, but I was laughing along because I was. I haven't yet got one of those yet, but I expect it. I don't feel like I don't think you're a real writer until you do get like bad reviews, because once you figure out how you're going to handle it, teaches you whether you're cut out for this or not. And in my business, I've had plenty of times where people said, what is this that when I've written something? So I've had my reviews, bad reviews in other ways. So yeah, you do have to have a tough skin.
Yeah, no, I've decided you definitely have to have the ability to just say, well, it is what it is and move on, because not everybody's
exactly
known to love what you do. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't get it, but that's okay. They probably wouldn't like my peach cobbler either. So you know what?
And you're going to give us that recipe by the end of the show, right?
If you really want it, I don't want people to get sick out there. That would be a bad thing.
Well, Terry, the mystery has been solved, and I'm glad that Wayne has listened to us in past episodes. So, Wayne, keep those cards and letters coming, as they say.
Yes, I will keep promoting this. Yes.
Yes.
No, I love it. I love what you guys do.
Terry, you got another question. Go ahead.
I would like to know which you think is more important when you write a story, plot, characters, or place?
I think that's a good question. I think, to me, it's usually always about the characters, because there are a lot of great ideas that I'm sure both of you have had great ideas, and then you can't figure out how to get that story across because maybe the character didn't just fit the place. So I like characters, and I think, I'm a person who really maps out. When I was younger, I would write, just start writing from my, I think they call them plotters and pantsers. You're either plotting out or. So when I was younger, I would just start writing the story, and then I would get to the middle, and I would have no ending for it. And that's, that's really difficult to have unfinished stories when you really like the first half. So I kind of figured out, if I know my characters, if I know what the characters are going to do, what their motivation is, then I can find the story kind of comes together at the same time. But I think if you don't have the characters, a good story can fall apart. What do you both think?
Wayne,
so that's the way I believe. I'm a character-driven fiction kind of person. I think that if you can write a good character, your readers are going to follow along. They're going to follow along and find out about the plot, and they're going to be happy with whatever place you've put the character. But if you haven't written a good character, then I don't think the plot really matters as much.
Mm-hmm.
I know I can't. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, there has to be an interest in the character for the story even to take off, because if you don't have a good character, all you got is a plot and a place. And, what's that? When you watch a movie, like Deadpool, you're not just watching the place and seeing a plot. You're interacting and seeing a character on the screen, so that I think adds a lot to the story, and I think a lot of us would agree with that. And Wayne,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Wayne.
I was going to say, since I was much younger, one thing that I'd always get complimented on in my stories was my dialogue, and I think that's because I've also been a big fan of people like David Mamet and and just playwrights and just getting their cadence and just listening how you can say so much just by the way. And I think it was either this show, this episode or last one, but Terry was talking about, I think it was earlier today when you're talking about writing Southern, you know, the way people mm-hmm. speak, you know, and it is, you can tell so much by not saying something just by the way somebody says it, you know? So it's that to me is also plot, you know what I mean? The way people speak, the way that they're holding back on things or the way that they can talk around the most important part of like whatever they're supposed to be speaking of. Hemingway was good at that too, writing, and they're not talking about what the real issue is. And then you get to the end of it and you're like, wow, you know, and then you can sit there and think about, oh, I think they were dealing with this. I think they were talking about that, you know? And I've always loved that.
Wayne, did you ever reach any blocks in your writing when you were writing this story? Did you ever find a roadblock where you couldn't get through and you had to sit down and wait a couple days?
Did you miss the part earlier when I said this was on a shelf for 20-something years?
Oh, yes. 20 years.
Yes. I had about a 25-year writer's block on this story. So I put it away and I come back to it. But that's the good thing is that I have a lot of stories that I started a long time ago that I can come back to. But recently, once I picked it up and figured out what I was doing with it, it kind of just all came together. So once, like 2 years ago, whenever I started rewriting this, in fact, I didn't even go back to the original, screenplay that I was writing for this. I just started fresh, and I remembered some of the earlier things that I had in it. But after that, it came, you know, pretty easy.
How do you deal with the reviews? I know you were talking about giving Terry a one-star review. How do you feel when you get a review?
Well, so far I don't have a ton of them, but they've all been pretty positive. So I'm waiting for. So Terry, maybe you can later on this week go give me a bad review.
I'm headed then, right over there. I mean, as soon as we get off the phone, I'm giving you a one star, no problem.
Yeah, you know, I would hope that I would be okay with it, but I think I know there are a lot of people say never read your reviews, never, you know. And I think that goes with whether you're an actor or, any kind of job where people can review you. I've got horrible reviews from my peach cobbler. That's why I don't want to give out the recipe today.
Well, you're going to have to send me the
horribly. So
you're going to have to send me the recipe because I'm going to need that so I can do a review on it.
Yeah. Calabash cookbook, I'll send it to you both.
Super,
sounds good. What's the best thing about being a writer and the worst thing about being a writer?
Probably the best thing is that women love writers, and I'm joking because my wife knows I'm a writer and she doesn't really seem to impress her.
Women love drummers.
Yes, I know. I wish somebody had told me that 30 years ago. But I've heard other people say it too, but I was watching that documentary about Fran Lebowitz I think it was on HBO recently, or maybe it was Netflix. And she was talking about how she doesn't know any writers who like to write. And I thought, you know, I love to write. I love to go away. I find a place like, you know, whether it was Calabash or I go to Sedona now, usually I love to go to Sedona and I'll take a couple of weeks when I get to the point where I'm ready to break down the story. After I've been writing notes and I've been doing the synopsis over and over, once I get ready to start writing, I'll go there for like usually a week. And my wife is very understanding. As a matter of fact, she loves when I go away, but I go there for like a week or 2 weeks and just really get into the book and really get the, like, try to get a rough draft, you know, even though you can't get a whole rough draft, but I just love that process. And then I love the rewriting process even more, you know, just I always tell people, like, if we're talking about it, that it's like sculpting. and you do your first draft and you have the big piece of marble. And then when you do start the revisions, that's when you start getting into the details and you chip away and you really make it come alive and make the, you know, all that stuff. So I just love the whole process of writing. The bad part is, like I said, you have to have another job to support your writing habit. So luckily I have a job writing, so at least I still get to be creative. But I know for a lot of people, it's you know, it's tough to find the money and the time to write.
Right. Terry?
Who are your favorite authors? You've mentioned a couple on the show so far, but who would you say, if you had to pick like two or three, who would they be?
Like I said, I love Mamet, and he wrote a book like last year, the year called Chicago, which I think was his first novel. So he's been writing, you know, plays all this time, which were great, but I really loved his book. I really loved to see him get into writing novels because I just like the way his mind works and I like the way his characters come alive and his dialogue. So he's a big one. I like people like Dave Sedaris who are comedians. I love, you know, probably Mark Twain was my biggest influence growing up. Rod Serling, I loved his short stories, you know, besides the Twilight Zone, I just mind worked and there was always a twist with it. Woody Allen short stories, Without Feathers and Getting Even in those early books, just made me laugh. I think my dad, when I was in high school, got me the book Without Feathers for Christmas. And I remember just laughing. Like, I'm not a person who laughs out loud normally. I appreciate humor, but I remember laughing to where I had to put the book down because it was so funny. So those are some. Recently, I just read a book. Let me see. Who is this? It was Jonathan Franzen called Crossroads that I really liked. So I'm a book club, so we, you know, and it's great when everyone gets to pick a book and it's their turn and you get to learn about authors you didn't know about. And
right.
So, yeah.
Any nonfiction books that
Tom
you
Terry yeah. Brown are big influences of mine lately.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Terry M. Brown, I'm sure.
Yeah. Is it Terry Mary or Terry Marie?
It's Terry Marie. We're gonna, you know, there's this whole thing about mothers should not be allowed to name their children while still under the influence of prenatal hormones.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well, so my maiden name was Buffmeyer with one F, Buffmeyer. My mother felt like Buffmeyer should have two Fs, so she made Terry with one R. And then Marie obviously had to be missing a letter, too, so she dropped the E.
Yes.
Well, my mom wanted my name to have two Fs, too, and my dad said it doesn't make sense. Wayne, there are no Fs in Wayne. There's not even one F in Wayne, so that doesn't make sense.
Not even one. So, and from that point on, the whole thing, yeah.
In my name, you know, a reference to Harry Potter, I am not Tom Riddle, but a lot of people refer to me as Voldemort when I'm online, so... That's where my name came from. Actually, Thomas Riddell was the name of the gravestone that J.K. Rowling had looked at to that influenced her character of Tom Riddle, and that would be that would be an ancestor of mine actually, in the family tree. So I am connected to that series, and I also am a part time. Well, I used to be, and I guess I still do it. Sleight of hand magic. So that's where my name originates from and what I like to do. And like Tom Riddle, I like to write and I like magic. So there's a lot of similarities between me and that wonderful character there.
I'm going to change it. It's, now it's the Amazing Tom and it's the legend, Terry the Legend.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Switching it around a little bit, but Wayne, we're kind of reaching the end of our show here and this is the time that we really refer to this as the Oscar moment. So any parting words that you'd like to share and would you like to thank anyone out there?
Well, I would like to say one of my best friends, his name is Vladimir Grupin. He's Ukrainian and his family is a wonderful Ukrainian family. And I'm going to get them Terry's book because I haven't read it yet, but but I don't read one-star review books, so I'm going to get it for them. And then, but I think that, but no, I am looking forward to reading that. But they are wonderful people, and what's going on right now is you know, they're just heartbroken for their family back there. But I am looking at I'm looking forward to reading the book. And Tom, would give me one of your better books. I know you've written like 15 or 20.
Yeah, my better book would be Poppy's Prison.
Oh, okay. That's I've seen that on the website. Yes, I will read that too. And other than that, I would like to thank Donald Trump for giving me a great character to write about. That was, you know, that's the only time you'll ever hear me thank him for anything, by the way. So,
right.
No, everybody has been, you know, who supports writers and actors and artists and mothers and people who write across country for a cause. You know, I'd like to thank all of them. So
great. Great. Wayne, it's been a pleasure. We've had some good laughs. And again, every time I watch Deadpool, I will think of you, and thank you for being on the Writer's Lounge.
Yes. Thank you for having me, both of you. And next time I'm in Calabash, I'm going to call Terry with two F's. I forgot what her last name was.
No. Well, so I'm now Terry Brown. I was Terry Buffmeyer with two F's then, so you'll have to look up Brown.
Okay.
But by all means, if you
Terry
come
Mary
back
Brown.
To Calabash, give me a call. Yeah, Terry Mary, that's me.
Yes, okay.
Very good, Wayne. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And there you go, Terry. Without the peach cobbler, we'll have to do our own research, I guess, to come up with that recipe. And any parting words that you would like to say to anybody out there, everybody out there?
I think the only thing is to remind everybody that right now I'm still doing the fundraiser with my book. So I'm using part of the proceeds to help a Ukrainian foundation. So if you feel like helping out, you can purchase the book on Amazon or at my website.
Very good. And if you'd like to read what I've written, you can look up Poppy's Prison. And I'm currently working on a story for Kindle Vella. Just look up my name there. And I wrote a short story called The Uber Ghost. And that's there for your enjoyment if you are into the scary and Stephen Kingish kind of thing. So we'll be doing that shortly, and hopefully we'll get more chapters in, more episodes in for everybody to read. So with that, I want to say that next time on June 13th, Monday, 2 weeks from tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we're going to have on Nancy McLaughlin. She wrote American Nomads, hands down one of the best and most memorable character-driven stories I have ever read. They are nomads, a roaming group of young adults inspired by living life without jobs and the absence of four walls of a house to constrain them. Until then, see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and eyes to the page and to let the story begin. From Terry and I, enjoy yourselves and be well. Good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Of the plot, it's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make